Welcome to Generation Now, a show by and for millennials and Gen Z. I am Troy McDonald. During the turmoil that occurred in Kenosha in the wake of the shooting of Jacob Blake and the protests and riots that ensued, my guest today was one of the only African-American members of the city council, and I'm honored to have him here today to discuss how the city plans to move forward in 2021 and what he believes we can do to unite the city. Please welcome Alderman of the 10th District of the City of Kenosha and Common Council President, Anthony Kennedy. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, just how are you doing? This has been one hell of a year. How are you doing?
You have put that in, that should be in quotes, hell of a year. It is interesting being an older person in the city of Kenosha at this time, at this point. It seems the amount of concerns, obstacles, problems that we encounter just keep multiplying. But I'm going to tell you something, Troy. I'm the guy that always wants to be on the court. I'm the guy that wants to have the ball. I thank God that I'm the one that's here doing this at this time.
Very interesting that you said that. It's like you said, the problems seem to keep multiplying. Mayor John Tantaranium has held four listening sessions regarding race and kind of racial equity in the city. He's gathered community input about how to process and how to proceed going forward. He's even discussed incorporating a community-oriented policing strategy, which has been done in Racine. How do you think the city has done and your district, right, has done in responding to racial inequities faced by the city?
Let's start with the district. I have the area we commonly call Wilson neighborhood. It stretches from 28th Avenue, and an interesting piece there is that where Mr. Blake was shot was on my side of the street, but on the other side of the street is the 7th Aldermanic District. Just the line stops right there in the middle of the street, which is now represented by Alderperson Shayna Griffin. In reference to the district, I was always very concerned during the demonstrations because there was a narrative that was being pushed by national media that just wasn't reflective of my district. And one of the things that I really wanted to push it was how the roots of the 10th District. The 10th District was historically middle class, still is, predominantly or not, well, maybe not predominantly, but a large group of African-Americans, middle-class African-Americans. A lot of the legacy families that we talk about in Kenosha, the Mahones, the Tompkins, the Jelks, these people, the Marx, they live in my district. You know, these legacy families are there. So when we talk about Jacob Blake shooting and we talk about the reaction to it, in my district, there was a real sense of, wait a minute, this is not something that is normal in our district. This is not the engagement that we have with the police on a normal basis in our district. One of the things I've done, Troy, is I'm a big supporter of Neighborhood Watch. And I've helped sponsor or start at least 9 neighborhood watches in the 10th district. So we aren't a group of people in the 10th that saw police as a problem. Not saying that there is no problems. Always there can be continuous process improvement. But we saw the police as a resource to help, or I did, I should say, as a resource to help improve or maintain the quality of life in our district. It's one of the tools I use. It's why watching that video was so shocking and agonizing because it wasn't reflective of the police department that we use, that I use to help run my district. What's the rest of the question, Mr. McDonald? I went on a little bit of a tangent there.
Yeah, no, and that's okay. It was more about how you think how you think the city can move forward after the four mm-hmm. listening sessions. What is being done right now as a result of those listening sessions in your district and across the city?
I am so very proud of the people who participated and put it on the listening sessions. I think that was just the very first step. And I think my opinion, Troy, is that we need more of these. We need to continuously and constantly keep speaking and keep talking and keep taking the measurement of the community to see, one, constant feedback. We have to know what is being said out there, how the actions we're taking, what the impacts they're having. In reference to the listening sessions, I worked one of them. I attended one as a participant. And the problems in our city are multifaceted, and they're on a lot of different levels. But I think the thing that we can really work towards is communication and an understanding of when someone has a concern, how do we respond to that concern? When Senator Lena Taylor was here and she had the listening session out by the collective, one of the things that was really interesting was the amount of questions that people had, but really no understanding of what level those concerns could be addressed at. So I think one of the things I picked out of the listening session, or one of the things I think we need to improve, is a definite constant education on what is the role of city government, what is the role of county government, what is the role of state government, and how those things work together when you have a concern. One of the questions that I got when I was out on during the demonstrations and talking to people, guy says, we need to raise the minimum wage. I said, well, that's not a city function. And that response generated this person to shut down communication with me. You don't want to do anything. You don't want to do anything. And he walked away from me. I realized how poorly I handled that situation in reference to saying, hey, that's not a city function. My job at that point should have been to try to teach him how to address that concern. So one of the things I picked up out of the listening session was there's a fundamental disconnect between what people understand the role of municipal government, county government, and state government, and what that actual role is. Even though I've been involved in this arena for 12 years, there's still people that I deal with who don't understand how that stratification works. So let's take that example of the minimum wage, right? The city of Kenosha cannot increase the minimum wage. I don't have the authority to do that. What I can do, and it's kind of a wonky thing, but what I can do is pass a resolution at the city of Kenosha saying, hey, we, the Common Council of the City of Kenosha, believe that the minimum wage should be higher, and then send that out to other government entities. And then those people who really want to push for the minimum wage, we give them that as a tool to go talk to other government entities. Yeah, it doesn't have a lot of weight to it. It doesn't have a lot of impact. But that's the thing I can do at this level because I don't have that control. One of the things that kept being pushed back is fire the chief, fire the police chief, right? I got over 600 emails, I believe. Wow. 364 of them are unread at this point, but I'm still working through them. I can't, as a common council member, I do not have the authority to fire the police chief. That's not an authority that lies with the common council. So when people are calling for us to do that, we do not have the authority to do that. And that's where the listening sessions, I think the next sessions, right? I believe there should be more sessions. The next sessions should really be about understanding what the role of municipal government is. Now, in reference to that, that authority lies with the Police and Fire Commission. That's by state statute. The Police and Fire Commission has policy, personnel, and procedure oversight of the police and fire department. We don't. We have the power of the purse, the budget, but we don't have that level of oversight of the police department. And teaching that so that people understand where their concerns should be met or where their concerns should be directed, I should say, I think that's an important piece because people are angry. Let me rephrase that. Some people out here are very frustrated and want to see some change, and they're not sure where to direct that. Now, there's a lot of people that are learning, and they're learning really quickly, and there's a new set of activism that's happening in our community. Some of it, let me be quite honest with you, Troy, some of it scares the heck out of me. But others...
Why is that? Why is that? Why does it scare you?
I tell you, the reason it scares me, and maybe scared is not the word, but there's an awakening happening, and that's good. But a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, right? And so you put the new activism together with I'll stay with that. We'll put this new group of activism together with a concern, but not a way to navigate that those concerns. That I think can be very dangerous, especially when your expectations are so high on what a person wants done. Unfortunately, the system is such that.
Yeah, I want to jump in here because that's one of the questions. And this show talks about issues with millennials and Gen Z, which are a lot of this new wave of activism, which has scared a lot of people. I was listening to Latasha Brown speak, who's one of the founders of Black Voters Matter. And she was giving an interview and she said that during the protests, not necessarily in Kenosha, but in other cities across the country, it was Generation Z, it was millennials like myself who were going right into the police officers' faces, right? This kind of new level of anger, like you said. And she said she had never seen anything like this kind of just unleashing of emotion before. Is that what you're kind of talking about? This kind of unbridled energy that people, and some, you know, critics to what you're saying would say, well, that's what people did in the 60s, right? That's what our baby boomer forefathers did in the boycotts and things like that. This is just the next generation of that. How would you respond to that?
I the energy is absolutely there. And I want to keep stating that is what's vital and what's important. Keep asking us the hard questions. Keep making the hard demands. The keep demanding continuous process improvement, right? Hold us accountable to the community. Definitely do that. That is what should be done. When I say scared, I'm talking about a point when someone becomes disappointed in their course of actions and decides that they need to do a more violent, a more radical, a more confrontational process. That's where I start to become very concerned. I'm always a process guy. I'm always a systems guy. I always believe that the way you do these things is through the process and through the systems, right? Troy, I know you heard me say this. How many signatures does it take to get on the ballot for your as an alder person? You've heard me say this.
Yes.
20 signatures to get on the ballot as an alder person. 100 signatures to get on the ballot as a county board supervisor, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's always my piece that I give you. You want things to change the county board, change the common council, right? No, but then you got to know what the process is. If that's the arena that you're going to be engaged in, you got to know what the rules are. I love playing volleyball. I love playing basketball. I have a little bit of skills with volleyball. I have absolutely no skills with basketball. Love playing it. Lots of enthusiasm. Okay, but when it comes to actual skills, I'm not that good. Okay. And I have to understand what the rules are to play basketball. I can't just get out there and hack attack people and expect that that's going to have results. Right. So I would say in the arena that of politics, where I think is where you're going to have the best change, the best impact for change, you got to know what the rules are. And again, the price of admission is it takes 20 signatures to get on the ballot. Now, unfortunately, all of us were just reelected in April of 2020. We are not up for election again until April of 2022. That's the way it is. All Common Council and all city council members. But again, the thing that I'm feeling encouraged, I told you scared at one part, but the other part I'm really encouraged was the amount of involvement in the presidential election and even the Wisconsin state representative election, how much activism was converted into energy in those areas. I think that as some people are starting to pay attention and ask some hard questions in our community, they are starting to come up with some results that I think are, or I shouldn't say results, they're starting to come up with some processes that I think are going to be real exciting in our community also. I believe that there's some people that are laying in the groundwork for a change in our community, and I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully I'll be a part of that change. If I'm not, well, I'll offer my expertise and my experience wherever it's needed.
That is a very refreshing thing for a politician to say, especially in this era, because you posted something along these lines on your Facebook page recently where you said, this is from your page, and I quote, "The mission of transformational change in our great and beautiful city is too big and too multifaceted for one person or one group. There is almost too much work to perform at so many levels. It is enough to overwhelm any one person or group." So I think, too, that we have to, if we're going to compare this kind of moment, and I've heard experts say that this is the third reconstruction in America in regards to race, right? But that Rosa Parks didn't do everything in the civil rights movement. You had SNCC, you had the NAACP, you had Martin Luther King. There are many different point people doing different things within the movement. And so it's interesting that you posted this on Facebook, that some people have different roles. There's different lanes for different people. How do you see that working in your district and in the city?
Let's take it back to my district first. I always tell people that I'm only the alder person of the 10th district to the next best person comes along. And if that next best person is a dynamic individual, has a better vision than me, then God bless and let them move forward. I don't own this seat. This seat belongs to the residents of the 10th district. I tell them, hey, my job is to maintain or improve the quality of life for my constituents. And I've also said that in reference to Jacob Blake and his family, I failed. If that's my mission, if that's my mantra, then I failed in reference to that family. I will continue to try to do the best good for the most amount of people in my district. Once that is no longer resonates with my constituents, once that is no longer a primary concern to them, then they need to find someone better than myself to do that. I can't keep telling you that I'm the guy and I'm the one if things aren't changing, if things aren't improving, if things are getting worse, because I told you my concern or my mantra, my mission is to maintain or improve the quality of life for my constituents. In reference to where do we go forward from this on the city level, one of the things that the demonstration, civil unrest, I don't like using the riot word, but so be it. One of the things it's done is we have to understand that if wherever we stand in Kenosha, in whatever level, that spot is not the entirety for the experience of all Kenoshans, okay? I've come to this city after being quite a wanderer. I've lived in 50 something different places. Military. My mom was an activist. My mom was a Baptist minister. And we moved for all three of those things. We moved because of that. But in Kenosha is where I set my roots down. Kenosha, and I love this town. and Kenosha works for me. And I say works, not like Kenosha is, it's good for me. But then I can't say that my experience is monolithic and anyone else that has a different experience is lying. So one of the things we have to do on a go forward basis is we got to have way more empathy and we have to be way more empathetic in reference to what is Kenosha. Okay. If you're in Hunter's Ridge, if you're in Strawberry Creek, if you're in Islanddale, maybe things are doing really, really well for you. And God bless. God bless for the situations that have put you in those positions. But if you're in some of our other more challenged neighborhoods in the city of Kenosha, maybe things aren't working as well. And we have to understand that. That doesn't mean that one person's vision is wrong and the other person's vision is absolutely true. It means that both of those things have, there's truth in both of those. And we have to understand that and work towards it. I think it's okay to be Kenosha's fiercest critic while at the same time being its greatest cheerleader. I think that's okay.
And speaking of different experiences, and I'm curious about this, not as your position or in your position as an alderman, but just as a Black man in this city, there is a controversy with some aldermen, Rocco LaMacchia and some others, who got into some hot water for recent comments with some in the community calling for his removal. And this question is bigger than Rocco, but as you are in a position of power in a space that was not designed for you or for people like us, right? How do you navigate comments like that? And how have you over the last decade and more of your tenure? And if you want to touch on his comments, you can, but I really want to kind of broaden it out. You're in a space that was not designed for Black people to begin with.
One of the most interesting signs I saw during the demonstrations was the system's not broke. It was designed to work like this. I do not want to believe that. My hope, my faith, my everything that I hold dear, I do not want to believe that. Having said that, it's very hard for Anthony Kennedy as a African-American alderperson to be the African-American alderperson. I told you that it only took 20 signatures to get on the ballot. I'll tell you that my districts are represented, the districts are represented around 5,700 people, give or take. In my last contested election, Troy, 600 people voted. My district is made up of 5,700 people, give or take. My last contested race, 600 people voted, and I got 380 or something of those votes, right? So your participation or lack of participation or one's lack of participation makes it really, really hard for me to be the Black alderman. Now, that race politics stuff works well in Milwaukee and Chicago, where you have more, I think, a base to be able to, that will support you on that. Here in Kenosha, I just told you who voted for me, right? I don't have the luxury to be the Black alderman in the city of Kenosha. In turn, I feel that what I do, if I do things that are important for people, if I do things that's going to improve people's lives and help in their quality of life or improve their quality of life, it's going to help Black people, but it's not going to help Black people exclusively. Rocco LaMacchia, let's talk about that. It's really, really difficult for me to use racism as a to call someone a racist. It's really hard for me. I want that to be the last card I play, so to speak. But when people do stupid things, you wonder why they do these stupid things. I have engaged Rocco LaMacchia on Facebook before that whole thing blew up, a couple of months before that whole thing blew up. And the result was I got banned off his Facebook page. I think Rocco LaMacchia is a pretty good guy. We've on city council, we had battles where we were trying to literally save the soul of the city. And I believe Rocco was one of the guys who was on the right side of a lot of these objects. Troy, you remember the council. I'm going to call them the council wars, when the Gang of Five was controlling things and fighting against the mayor.
I do.
One of the guys that were, you know, we could count on to do the things that needed to rebuild this city after the destruction of the economic destruction of 2008. So him and I had some disagreements, right? But we could still sit down and have a beer at Swedes. We could still sit down and talk to each other when everything was over. So that comments that I started seeing from Rocco really was very concerning for me, because it didn't, again, it's kind of like that Jacob Brown video. It didn't jive with the person I was dealing with. It didn't line up with who I knew to be. But when you tell someone, hey, this is offensive, hey, this is problematic, and they keep doing it, I got no defense on that, man. You've been told, and yet you continue to do it. Hey, this is really problematic, man, especially given there's a different Kenosha after the police shot Jacob Brown. There's a different Kenosha now. And to act like it isn't, to continue to operate in these, quote, normal ways and not acknowledge that, that is a very dangerous thing, because I think it gives people who are bad actors in our community cover to do some bad things.
It's the day after Mike Gravely announces, or the day of, when Mike Gravely announces his decision whether or not to charge Rustin Chesky, the officer who is involved in the shooting of Jacob Blake. What's your greatest fear, and what do you worry about the most, or do you worry at all?
My greatest fear is that this period of time I have been inadequate in providing and building capacity in our community. Every day we get another day to build capacity. We get another day to build empathy. We get another day to build a bridge. And the day after that announcement is made, my greatest fear is I've been inadequate in my ability to do those things.
Wow. What's your... As we wind to a close here, we have just a few minutes left, about three. What's your biggest wish for the city coming out of all this, going into 2021?
My biggest wish is that this COVID thing is controlled, so we can start seeing people and hugging people and touching people again, and we can have our festivals. And we can have our street, our church festivals, and we can have our all these things that make up the character of this community, and making up in such a way, all these things that contribute to the character of this community, so that we can get back to knowing that we are Kenoshans. I believe in Kenoshan exceptionalism. And it's both a sword and it's a double-edged sword, right? It's a good thing and a bad thing in some ways. But my wish is that we get back to a point where, or we can go to a point where we're engaged with each other in ways that we have been so limiting because of this COVID-19. My wish is that come February, which is the primaries of 2022, or April of 2022, which is a general election, that there'll be a whole slate of candidates, that people in Kenosha will have a real choice to make. And if you want to stay the course, then you vote that way. If you want, I hope that there's a lot of options and people on the ballot for that. In the marketplace of voting, we get to have those discussions and then let the voters decide who has the best idea.
Anthony Kennedy is the alderman of the 10th District of Kenosha and Common Council President. Thank you so much for being here.
Again, thank you. And thank you for the work you're doing in our community. It's important that we have a press and media that is continues to make those questions, continue to ask those questions, and continue to shed light in the areas that affect people's lives. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. Alrighty, everybody. Until next time.